T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Coming fresh off the Traz Powell scrimmage, we're going to talk right now in the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline with Manny Diaz, Hurricanes head football coach. Manny, good morning. How are you?
Doing great, Joe. Good morning.
Manny, a lot of stuff to get to, man. First of all, I love Traz Powell. How about the history? Before we get going on everything crazy, how many great football players through the years have either played all their home games or played on Traz Powell? We could get a pretty good recruiting class and all-time class with that, huh?
That's the mecca, you know, and our players felt it. You know, we talked about it beforehand, and it's a connection in terms of who we are, and I thought it was a great atmosphere out there. We really enjoyed it.
All right, let's jump into – we got to always start with this one, Manny, so I hope you're not rolling your eyes on me right now, but the quarterback situation, the writers all seem to think that Jaren Williams had a good one. Perry played okay, and Tate Martell is behind the game. You've looked at all the tapes. What do you think of your quarterback play overall?
I think it's still what you would imagine at this point. You know, I think we're all still trying to figure out what we're doing. What was pleasing to us is that from where we were a week ago, it was night and day. I think offensively we all made a big stride going forward. And I just thought the quarterback play was much more poised. I thought we were starting to figure out where to go with the ball. I think there's all three of those guys. We have some throws that they'd like to take back. But you have to consider this. We basically played, in terms of snaps, we basically played one game, right? One game. And with three guys giving up a snap. So, you know, you're talking about a super, super small sample size in terms of being able to make any type of you know, impressions. We're so thin in so many different spots on the roster that really limits how long we can stay out there, which of course limits how many at-bats each of the quarterbacks can get.
Manny, how's the offensive line so far? We're still a work in progress, work to be done. How are you liking it so far?
Well, it's spring and you're missing a couple guys, but again, there's just a difference in the competitive level. That's really the big thing that we've been kind of harping on all spring, but for sure on Saturday. And again, when I watched them play on Saturday, those guys were giving us a chance to function. You know, I mean, even Navon Donaldson, who's basically, we had to move to center, with Gaynor being out here for a little bit. I mean, Navon has gone in there, never having played center, and in 8 days allowed us to function as an offense. We didn't have a bad snap, you know, in terms of IDing the correct linebackers and so on and so forth. So that's been really encouraging. There's a couple other guys that are really making some developments. I think that unit is starting to develop some confidence, which really was one thing we felt that would be a major goal for us this spring, to get those guys thinking like big-time players again.
Man, it's nice to see Mark Pope making some plays. You know, the hype coming out of high school, he could have gone anywhere, stayed home. And to finally, with his patience, I know you've spoken to him. You've said that before here on the show. Talk about Mark Pope and seeing him make some of these big plays you've seen.
Great example of a guy, you know, about college football being a developmental, you know, sport, and priding ourselves on being a developmental program. I mean, whatever happened, you know, last fall, don't really know a lot about that. But, you know, I'll tell you a quick story. We're at Columbus last week. And it is not going well for the offense. They're all nervous and they can't figure out what to do. And right before halftime, you know, Mark catches a dig route and takes it 52 yards to the house. And this past week, we go back to practice, and it's just like a different guy. You know, he's catching balls on Thursday. He's just got a different pep in his step. And all of a sudden, you're like, man, who's this? It didn't look like the same guy even from the first, forget about last year, the first 3 weeks. Because, you know, sometimes you just got to, you just got to make that shot. You know, you just got to see that ball go in sometimes, and all of a sudden you're like, okay. And again, that doesn't mean that he's got it all sorted out, but it, you know, certainly you saw him make some plays Saturday and looks more like the guy we all thought coming in. And that's just how it happens sometimes, you know. It's just, you know, these guys got to learn, and they got to make a play to give them the real confidence that they can do it.
All right, so two other guys I wanted to ask about, KJ Osborne and Will Mallory. How are they working out so far? How's everything going with them through spring so far?
Well, KJ's a very versatile guy, very smart player. You know, I think he's going to have a really good year for us, can do a lot of things, function in a lot of different ways for us, got really good hands. And what we talked about, just the elite work ethic, which is really what we wanted in that wide receiver room. And then Will Mallory, you know, in this offense with you know, Coach Unis' offense, there's going to be so much flexibility in terms of things that we can do with tight ends. And Will's a matchup problem, you know. I mean, he's got great catch radius, and he's athletic. He can run after the catch. He had an explosive play in the scrimmage 2 weeks ago, and then, you know, made a big play, I think, on a fourth down early in the scrimmage today. So, you know, we've got, you know, I think what's fun is finding out who our guys are, and then we've got, you know, unlimited ways to get our guys the ball. And that's why we get the more comfortable we get in terms of pass protection, and pass protection starts with the quarterback. And not just knowing where to go with the ball, but just understanding how to step up and navigate in the pocket. That's been a big thing we've been working on here all spring. You know, at times you'll see in the scrimmage, well, the defensive end tagged him. Well, if the quarterback's truly stepping up in the pocket, a tag is not going to get a guy on the ground, you know. And you know, they just can't stand there, you know, like a statue, patting the ball, waiting for a guy to come open. That's just not realistic. So, you know, a lot of times it's easy to stack the wounds at the offensive line. So offensive line, you know, having issues protecting. The quarterback is responsible for his protection, either with how he negotiates the pocket or understanding how to get the ball out of his hands. And I think that's been new for our guys. I think on Saturday they showed the best understanding of how to set themselves up to be able to get the ball out of their hands.
All right, I need a couple scrimmage risers here before we float on here a little bit. Give me a couple names when you go through those tapes and looking, going, damn, that guy really is playing well. Give me a couple new names there, Coach, if you would. I like it.
Well, I mean, obviously we talked about some of the names, you know, a week ago, but yeah, but again, a guy like DJ Skase really doing a really, really nice job on the offensive line. You know, I'll tell you a guy that's kind of, you can tell he's doing his job really well because he doesn't stand out a lot, is Gervin Hall at safety. Young guy that we think's got a lot of promise, and he's barely put a foot wrong in terms of just his checks, where he goes, and like I said, sometimes he loses because his, you know, safeties, they just make all the plays that are there to be made. And then I'd say DJ Ivey at corner has really made some strides, and you know, he's a super long guy, you know, great strength, and he gets his hands on you in line of scrimmage, it's a problem. And so his development has been really, really big for us there in the back end.
Let's head to the defensive side of the ball for a second. Your defensive front seven, how close are you to where you want to be with those guys? Obviously, we know about the linebackers, but those front four also.
Well, I don't think we'll know exactly what we are until August when we get some of these transfer guys in here, you know, and I think that's kind of why we wanted to bring them in. You know, certainly we didn't have John Ford on Saturday, and John's been having a phenomenal spring camp. So I think, you know, those guys understand the standard of what we're all about up front. To be a great defensive line in college football, you can't have four. You've got to have eight because of the way people are going to try to tempo you, and certainly we'll get that our first couple games. So you've got to be able to keep those guys fresh up there so they can be disruptive. And we know that's going to be a big key. Well, I mean, it's a big key every week, but certainly it's going to be a big key in the opener because that last scrimmage is going to be a big time deciding factor in terms of who wins that game.
Coach, who is the best run stopper right now of that group of defensive linemen, or is it still, you still got to figure that out here?
Well, yeah, I mean, we're a long ways away. I mean, I would think through the course of spring, I would think Ford, you know, has been, like, again, Silvera has been doing a really good job. And as we mentioned, he's made a big jump from where he was in the fall, but we're still, you know, again, we're still learning our way, and that's all part of it. We're fine. We got another week here to try to, you know, get some things on tape, where now the guys in the summer, when they go work on their own,
right,
can at least understand how we're functioning and you know, come back in August an even better team than we leave it here this Saturday.
All right, we got to ask you about the Ed Reed speech. We played a little bit of it at the alumni banquet. seems to like being around a lot, Coach, and I can tell your respect for him. And as you said, one of the greatest safeties to ever play the game. I mean, a no-brainer Hall of Famer. Help me out a little bit on a speech and how that goes over with all those guys.
You know, I mean, how could you not take something away? Not just for us, but as our current players. I mean, how could you not take something away? I mean, anything that guy says, you know, you should be hanging on every word. But the thing we spoke about the day after, the morning of the scrimmage, was you know, Ed Reed is a guy that can sit there and just talk about himself and how he did this and how he did that, and everybody would just nod their head and listen. And he came and spoke to our team, and all he spoke about was his teammates. You know, and he actually mentioned something that was really profound. I mean, Ed's going to be the seventh Miami Hurricane to enter the Hall of Fame in Canton this summer. And Ed mentioned that it meant as much to him. You know, he was wearing his college ball Hall of Fame jacket when he spoke to us. He said that almost meant as much to him, if not more, than the Pro Football Hall of Fame jacket. And the reason why is because he talked about just, you know, the difference in the nature of a team in college as opposed to a team in the pros.
Wow.
In the pros, you sort of all the individuals And you know, and our guys, you know, it's the issue with youth, right? You know, it's one of those things. Well, you know, oh sure, you know, I don't know if I believe that. It has to be better in the pros. And Ed is sitting there telling them, you know, the team you have, the relationships, the bonds you have with the guys in the locker room, and the college game is something you'll never get it again in the rest of your life. And we all know, because we've all been that age. It's such a hurry to get to the next stage of your life, right? You know, got to get here, got to do this, got to do this, And you can really not appreciate what you have. And he must have mentioned 20 names of teammates, all in different stories. You tell a story and mention this guy, that guy, and that guy. And he tell another story and mention four other guys. And that just shows, you know, and I'm talking about guys, well, famous players, guys that are players would have no idea who they are. But they meant something to Ed, and I thought that was really cool.
All right, Coach, I know that you do nothing but do football stuff 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but I sort of did see you at Wade's final game at home in the AAA. How was that?
That was a surreal event. This wasn't my line, but I did read it somewhere that of all of Dwayne Wade's accomplishments, getting Miami to show up on time to a sporting event.
you could appreciate that.
And no one left early. It was remarkable. People were saying more people left early for Game 6 against the Spurs than left that game. it was the feel of a big time event, and what a neat way for the series to be able to say goodbye and continue to watch them play at a high level. I mean, that was a cool part too. That's the night I think everybody there will not soon forget.
Well, I'll tell you what, and then, hey, let's go back to that 88-footer, man, on the yacht coming in. You were in rare form that night, Coach. I had to give you a standing ovation in the back. You decided for those 400 or 500 folks that showed up. You came ready to go off that boat, Coach. That was pretty impressive.
Well, you know, the boat, that was an Uber. You can take an Uber now, and they got boats.
Was that an XL? That must have been an XL,
yeah.
Then.
Yeah, it's a little bit of an upgrade, but it was pretty cool, man. It's a neat little service I got now on Uber. If you ever need to get someone on the water, you know, every now and then an 88-footer. You know, with Uber, you never know if it's going to show up, right? But the 88-footer showed up. That was pretty cool.
Coach, I know you got to go big time to places and to show up, but that was something special. Those are pretty good. And, of course, my guys got on the boat for a quick picture. Of course, they had to get on there.
I asked the guy, I said, hey, whose boat is this? The guy goes, mine, who are you? I go, I'm just here to get a picture, man. That's all. Don't worry about me. Coach, thank you, man. Always great having you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, enjoy your week, guys.
All right, Manny Diaz getting set for Orlando.
That's right.
Whoever's healthy enough to finish it out, man. And anyway, we got to take a break.
Stuff.
We want to apologize. His phone was in and out a little bit to get through that. We'll coach him up a little bit on that, getting a different location for the next interview.
A little landline.
Get a little something different. Anyway, we got a lot more stuff coming up. Tony Pauline, we'll switch over to the NFL draft coming up. Ask him about some of those Canes players. Matter of fact, we're just 10 days away from the first round of the NFL draft. My God, it's right around the corner.
Radio.com.
Test 2.
feet to win the Masters. Everyone quiets down. Tiger back behind the ball. Woods puts it.
And in! He has done it! Tiger is back! Tiger is back on top! Tiger Woods, the 2019 Masters champion. One of the great comeback stories in American sports history. Masters number 5, Major number 15, and Augusta National roars like never before.
It's crazy how life just evolves and, you know, goes on. You know, 97, my dad wasn't really supposed to be there. Wasn't supposed to travel, but he came. Gave me a little putting tip on Wednesday night and ended up making everything that week. Yesterday, Sam had a soccer game for States, and they didn't make it to the final, so I asked him if they wanted to come up, and kind of had to talk him into it. And they both came up, and next thing you know, their dad's a Masters champion.
And now for a moment that I think many thought we'd never see again, the green jacket being put on your shoulders as a champion again at Augusta. Fred, it's time.
Well, Patrick, you've been a great champion, and I can't tell you how the pride and the way you've worn the green jacket this past year, what that means to all of our members. So we thank you very much for that. You've been a great champion.
Thank you.
And now we'd be honored if you would place the green jacket on Tiger for the fifth time.
Yeah, buddy.
Congratulations, Tiger.
Thank you,
so happy for
you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, you call it whatever you want. That thing was unbelievable yesterday. Even if you're a casual fan, somebody said, hey, you got to see Tiger Woods and what he's doing right now. He's hanging around, man. He's hanging around. He's got a chance. And the next thing you know, he's up two shots after some of the best players in the world had a couple of double bogeys in there. It was crazy. Fun to watch yesterday and a lot of great stuff. For me, man, that ranks right up there as, I think the number's going to play out on TV. I think we're going to see some stupid numbers.
Well, the Saturday ones are stupid. I can't imagine what the Sunday ones are going to be.
They
like.
Were good in the last 4 or 5 years. I just think that just set everybody up. It was like a delicious appetizer. You're going, man, the appetizer's really good. I can't wait for the main course. And it lived up to it, especially the fact that he didn't run away with it like he used to. Like, there were a bunch of guys that went ahead of him, then they all came back, and then he just kept plugging away. But it was the top of that leaderboard had some of the best players in the world, man. I mean, you look at Molinari and Koepka and how good those guys are. Johnson quietly was in there. Just guys that have been flirting with number one in the world or top players and really good at majors. And Tiger was at 43 years old. Everybody knows the story, right? But we do like a good comeback, man. Whether it's age as a guy gets older, overcoming physical stuff with all the knee surgeries and back surgeries, and, of course, the personal stuff that we've all lived through, right?
Well, we've seen it, up close and personal right here in our backyard.
In Orlando.
Yeah.
On Thanksgiving, when either she found out or he told her. Yeah, it all kind of changed.
It all started there, right?
Yeah, man, it got real bad in the press conference where he apologized to everybody and his mom's sitting there in the front in that awkward moment with her friends. And, you know, mom, some things I have to say. And he's back on top, man. It just says, like, it's great for everybody out there that's going through crap in their life. You can have a great comeback, man. I mean it. I mean, we can all use that. I understand none of us are ever going to have the greatness of second best golfer of all time. And maybe when it's all said and done, the greatest golfer of all time. He's had the greatest impact on golf, and it's not even close. He's had a bigger impact on his sport than anybody else has on their sport.
Not even a question.
What he does when he's playing on viewers to the money and the way the money, the payout, the purse money in these golf tournaments every week, including the $11.5 million they split up yesterday for the Masters, is crazy. It's just nuts. And it's got his name written all over it. And
Joe, and the purse is up to $11.5 million. There's a Tiger effect to it, and that's happened in the last 15 to 20 years. When the three runner ups all get a check for $860,000 each,
split three of them. You know what it's I mean? Crazy.
Even fifth place, $400,000. I mean, there's a lot of money in it, and it's all because of what Tiger's brought to golf in the last 15 or 20 years. I mean, he got a check for $2 million yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And his sponsors all running back after losing a lot of them with everything that was going on. And just it's been a hell of a comeback. When you put in everything, first of all, back surgery. For anybody out there that's had back surgery, your back's never the same. And for some whoever that doctor is, by the way, that guy must be really, really good at what he did.
He's going to be giving out a lot of referrals.
Back together and everything else. And knee and everything for him to play the way he was and the confidence. It was fun to watch. I don't know if anybody else out there. I couldn't stop watching. I watched the whole thing yesterday. And it was.
I had a hard time moving. And a lot of people who texted in also, 56022 Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line, said the same thing. Never got off the couch, Joe, not even to go to the bathroom. Somebody texted it. Didn't want to miss anything.
Well, there was just so much going on. Like Koepka hits one in the water and comes back and has an eagle. Yeah. So he loses. He double bogeys the par three. If you hit it in the front, it automatically goes in the water. And then he comes back and has an eagle. So he jumped right back in it. Hell, he's got a putt on 18 if he makes it to force Tiger to make a par instead of a bogey. I mean, there was just so many crazy things going on, and a couple of young guys are making a move. They made birdie on those par fives. So they got two par fives on the back nine there. So they went ahead knowing that Tiger and the rest of those guys still had them to come. But it was just the whole thing's fun. Plus, you know the holes. If you've been watching golf, you know what the holes look like. You know that par three gives a lot of guys, you know, it bends. If you hit it a little bit short, everything rolls back. If you spin it too much, rolls back into the water. Then I think the weirdest shot of the day, Molinari, who's just so good, hit a ball about halfway out in the pond. It looked like us playing on a Sunday.
Yeah, it looked like somebody, a hack job right there.
I don't know if the guy hit something or what. But he literally, it didn't even come close. He literally hit it in about halfway out in the pond.
It looked like when you're playing with one of your boys out there.
It was
a couple too many beers right before that that shot.
It was bad, and then he hit a chip that barely made it up. I was going, man, my man can say whatever he wants. He is feeling back nine Masters pressure.
Tiger pressure.
And Tiger. But the crowds, man, was crazy. Anyway, I can't wait to see what today's numbers look like.
They'll be out soon, I'm sure.
For CBS, but Tiger took care of it, was the story. But I thought it was one of the best comebacks. I don't know if other people felt that way or they're over it, but it was all Tiger. So for the Tiger fan club, it was a special day. Tony Fiorentino right off the bat.
Of course.
Send me something right off.
Of course.
Tony Fiorentino, just right off the bat, first person. Just can't get enough Tiger in this comeback.
Well, I mean, it's a different – with him, it's different because it's the Masters. This wasn't a normal tournament on a regular Saturday. This was the biggest tournament of the year, and who would ever thought beforehand? Think about the guy who bet $85,000 on him. You think that he ever really thought that there was a chance for Tiger to? I mean, obviously, if you're betting $85,000 on somebody, you either have a lot of money to blow, or you know some insider information.
I was gonna say, if you're betting $85,000,
you're not really
on
worried
Tiger,
about losing $85,000.
Yeah, you got some crazy
14-1 odds on that $85,000 bet yielded out a payout of $1.19 million, largest single ticket payout in the history of William Hill Casino history in the United States.
Wow.
Yeah, like that was the biggest one. But we have a lot of texts coming in. How about Horn Dog? The dead has arisen. Can I get a hell yeah for Tiger Woods winning the Masters? Can I get a hell bleep yeah for Game of Thrones returning to the airwaves last night also?
All right, so I got home and I jumped on it halfway through. I watched 5 minutes.
Got to turn it off then.
And I turned it off.
Yeah, you can't do it. You can't watch half of it.
They were kissing. I didn't know what happened when they started kissing. And then the damn dragon got that look in his eye. I had to, and I realized that the dragon's going to be on the bad guy team, so I had to turn it off. I got to see the whole thing.
You realize it's been 18 months since Game of Thrones has been on. You can't just waste it by watching half.
I've been watching all the reruns. They've been teasing you. They've been on here recently.
Of course.
Then I'm going, what am I doing, man? I just, get to the final, and then you were teasing me this morning. You gave me
some
great. Don't tell me.
No. It's too early for any kind of spoiler for that. A couple days from now, it's a different story, but everyone's got to be given that 48-hour window. How about this one? Absolutely, I watched the Masters. To me, it was one of the greatest comebacks in professional sports history. One thing for sure, you never gave up, or he never gave up.
Yeah, and by the way, he could easily, if he never golfs again after all his stuff.
He's still in the top three
he
ever.
He could have disappeared. He still makes plenty of money. And he's got the second greatest career in the history. And nobody's going to catch him. Look at all these guys. We can't figure out who's number one in the world. Every week it changes, right? One guy gets hot for, you know, everybody thought all these different guys were going to dominate Jordan Spieth, and he's disappeared. So you don't know. This guy comes back, wins late last year, not going to play as much. So when he does play,
it's big.
It's going to be big, especially when he plays the way he did. By the way, Tony Pauline's going to join us when we come back. We're going to get into the draft, talk some with Tony, as we're just 10 days away from the first round of the National Football League draft. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back in a moment.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
With the 13th pick in the NFL draft,
the Miami Dolphins select.
We are a week and change away from the NFL draft. We're going to jump out the Toyota Hollywood hotline right now. Talk to Tony Pauline, NFL draft analyst and publisher of draftanalyst.com. Tony, good morning. How are you, buddy?
I'm okay. How you guys doing?
Tony, we're doing great, man. We haven't spoken to you for a while, but gosh, it's that time. Everybody starts getting excited about the picks and moving up and moving down. We get good information, bad information. I want to start with the Broward guys, if you don't mind, down here in South Florida. Tony, I don't think we've ever had it happen before. Three players from Broward County, potentially, Brian Burns, Nick Bosa, and Devin Bush, all expected to get drafted in the first round. Would you say that all three end up going in the first round?
Very likely. I mean, I think Devin Bush could be first. I think Burns will be right behind him. All three good players. Absolutely, definitely could happen.
What about Nick Bosa? I mean, for a long, long, long time, he was obviously the number one guy on the board, or at least in a lot of these mock drafts. And Kyler Murray now has jumped up there. But what do you think? Nick Bosa to San Francisco at two, you think that's kind of a lock?
If they don't trade down, I think the Niners will roach or look to trade down. They've gone they've gone heavy on the defensive line in three of the past four drafts. They made the trade for Dee Ford in free agency, which kind of took care of their pass rushing needs. So I think if the good offer is there, San Francisco will trade down. Otherwise, I do think that they take Nick Bosa, because the contract that they signed Dee Ford to was a team-friendly contract, and they basically can get out of it after a year. So if the Niners are there, it'd be shocking if they take anybody other than Nick Bosa.
Tony, let's talk about the quarterbacks. Always a hot topic, especially you're like Miami Dolphins, been looking for a quarterback for like 15 years now. Kyler Murray, go first, and you're bored still. Are you pretty sold that's going to happen?
Well, he's not the number one quarterback on my board. Dwayne Haskins is, but I think it'd be a major surprise if Kyler Murray does not go to the Arizona Cardinals and the Cardinals go in a different direction. I mean, you know, they bring in Cliff Kingsbury, which was a questionable hire, and as somebody told me at the combine, when you bring Cliff Kingsbury in and people question that, you better make sure he has the tools that he feels
right.
Comfortable with to win at the next level. And we all know how Kyler Murray feels. So, I mean, I don't agree with it, but it looks like that's what's going to happen.
And then we got Haskins, too. You got lock three still?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Okay. Jones going the first round as a fourth guy, yes or no?
Yes, I think he may go a little bit earlier than people are projecting.
Wow.
Could go in the middle part of round one. He's a good quarterback. I mean, yeah, he needs some time, but, you know, he played in a pro system. He had an excellent coach in David Cutcliffe that has done a great job developing quarterbacks in the past. He played on a Duke team, which really, I mean, Duke is going to have no one else drafted. They may have one other guy signed as a priority free agent. So he basically had to carry that team, that offense on his shoulders. And he did a great, he did a very good job of it for 3 years. He's not like a one-year wonder. He's been a good quarterback for a while. So people tend to poke holes in his game. Yeah, he's not refined. He doesn't have the arm of Drew Lock, but he's got a lot going on between the ears.
You think Lock and Haskins, or Lock or Haskins, is there and available at 13, or both gone before that?
I think there's no way Haskins is going to be available. I think people are punching holes in his game that don't exist. To me, he's either the fourth pick of the draft to the Oakland Raiders or the sixth pick to the Giants or goes to one of those teams if they trade up. You know, Locke, I tend to doubt he's going to be there. I'm not big on Locke. I think he's going to be overdrafted. He's got all the great physical skills. He's got a great upside, but he has a big bust factor to his game. He's just very inconsistent. He could be there. I'd say it's less than 50-50 at this point right now.
Tony, how does this draft overall look for pass rushers?
Well, I'm not just pass rushers. I think it could be a historic draft on the defensive line.
Okay.
Now, whether you want to include pass rushers, defensive ends, defensive tackles, edge rushers, I think when you look at it from a defensive line point of view, it could be a historic draft. Not in just the number of players that are taken in the top in the first round or in the top 90, the quality of these players. These guys are going to live up to their billing.
How about Joe Jackson while we're talking about that? I was going to ask you about some of these UM guys. Is Joe Jackson moved up, down? Where do you see him fitting in with the guys on the outside?
I think he's a third-round choice, probably the early part of round three. Needs a little refinement in his game, needs to get a little bit bigger. A very good pass rusher who's going to be a liability at the next level against the run, but he's still a young kid, just physically matures and he learns the game. He has the potential to grow into a three-down player.
Is Jackson the first guy, Joe Jackson, the first UM guy off the board for you? Could it be Willis?
I have Jackson rated slightly ahead of Willis, so I think Jackson will be the first guy off the board. I think Willis is also a third-round pick. Terrific year after a guy coming into the season was graded as a streak-free agent by scouts. Didn't even expect him to get an invite to camp or signed as a free agent, only get an invite to camp, I should say. Willis is just a shade behind Joe Jackson.
Do you, Tony, I know this is a question the Dolphins have talked about over and over. You like this quarterback class? Is next year's quarterback class as good or close or better than this year's? How do you look at them, the quarterback class this year and next year?
Well, yeah, I mean, on paper right now, next year's quarterback class seems to be very good at the top. I mean, next year's quarterback class could rival what we saw last year. Now, that said, you know, if you've got a good quarterback staring you in the face, you can't pass him up to say, oh, we're going to wait to see what we get in 2020, because as we've seen with the Matt Barkley's and with other players, quarterbacks in the past, sometimes that doesn't pan out, and then you got egg on your face. You know, you can't pass up a Dwayne Haskins because what you may get in 2020. If you're looking at a Jarrett Stidham in round three, a guy who's got a large amount of upside, needs some coaching, you can't pass him up because you're going to say, well, listen, we're going to get a quarterback early part of round one in 2020. Right now on paper, it looks like 2020 is going to be a much stronger quarterback class, but a lot of things can happen as we've seen in the past.
Tony Pauline joining us here on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline from draftanalyst.com publisher. All right, so the Dolphins are at 13. If the Dolphins decide to trade down a little bit, could they get sort of the same player at 13 they can get in the 20s, or is there just a top 15 kind of heavy draft and everyone outside of that is maybe tier two? What's the deal there between picks 13 and maybe 25?
You know, if they are looking on the defensive line, you're going to get a good defensive lineman at 25, but the caliber of player that you're going to get at 13 is going to be much better, especially if a guy like Christian Wilkins is still on the board, a guy from Clemson, his teammate Dexter Lawrence is still on the board. Yeah, if you're looking defensive line and say you take a Jerry Tillery at 25, Jerry Tillery is still a good player, but, you know, there's a big drop-off. There's a drop-off between, say, Jalen Ferguson, pass rusher from Louisiana Tech at 25, compared to Brian Burns at 13, if you decide to go in that direction or take Brian Burns that early.
It's going to be interesting. As you know, Dolphins got a new coach who ran a lot of really creative stuff defensively for the New England Patriots. You think that changes the way they look at defensive guys? Like, we shouldn't just look at specific positions because they got guys standing up. They got guys, they play them so different than everybody else. How do you look at what the Dolphins are going to do?
Yeah, that's just an extension of Bill Belichick, you know, with Teddy Bruschi and Mike Vrabel, what he did with all those types of guys. A lot of those guys were taken later on, you know, third round, fourth
right.
round, fifth round. They weren't early selections. So, yeah, I could see, you know, maybe taking a short nose tackle, a guy who was a short nose tackle in college, and people saying, what are they going to do with this guy? And all of a sudden he's an inside linebacker. You know, that,
right.
that is a possibility. because that's, you know, not just with the new coach for the Dolphins. That was Bill Belichick's history at New England.
Juwan Taylor, offensive lineman from Florida. He's the top-rated offensive line or tackle. There's a big drop-off after that, right? Like, usually there's a couple guys in the top 10, but there's a little bit of a drop-off after him, right?
Well, not really. I'm hearing some medical red flags on Juwan Taylor. There's some word out there from multiple people that there are a few people that there are teams out there that are concerned about some of his medicals. He's also had some major weight fluctuations while he was at Florida. It could be, you know, don't be surprised if Andre Dillard, the left tackle from Washington State, is selected before Juwan Taylor. And the reason is because Andre Dillard of Washington State is the best pure left tackle in this year's draft. Juwan Taylor is solely a right tackle. You can't play him on the left side. And left tackles always take a priority. So Dillard could go before Juwan Taylor. And then there's Jonah Williams of Alabama. You know, is he a tackle? Is he a guard? I like him at guard, potentially center down the road. But there are some teams that, like the New York Jets, like the Buffalo Bills, who feel that he's going to be able to handle the left tackle duties at the next level. So I think he's right there with Andre Dillard. It wouldn't surprise me if Jonah Williams goes before him because of Jonah Williams' reputation in the scouting community.
Let me ask you this. Do you find teams doing a lot more work than they used to as far as background checks? And you just talked about one of the things. Spend a little more time on campus to see what these guys are like, especially when they're high picks, knowing the amount of money they're getting now and signing bonuses alone. You think they do a lot more work, Tony? They do.
Well, first of all, I mean, the high picks were making more money before the CBA was resigned to reshape the cut. You know, five. You look at the money that guys like Jake Long, et cetera, got. Chris Long, that was much more
big money. Yeah.
Now, but you know, to your point, exactly. I mean, what they don't spend time on campus. They will speak with coaches. They will speak with the college head coaches, the position coaches on college, to get an idea of what these guys are like. There's always tons of background work. Plus, the fact is, the draft now is in late April. Sometimes we're hitting May with the draft, so these guys have all this time on their hands, and they're constantly, we used to call it paralysis by overanalysis. I don't know that's necessarily a good thing, because sometimes you're looking for holes in a guy's game that may not even be there. But yeah, of course they're looking at these guys' backgrounds. You have to.
You think Arizona's trying to get out of that number one pick?
No, I think the conversation is, do you give Cliff Kingsbury what he wants, which is Kyler Murray, or do you trade down? Remember, someone has to really want to trade up. Now, the team who may want to trade up are the Oakland Raiders to get Kyler Murray, and they have a lot of ammunition to trade up. I think they'll listen to offers. I don't think there's a big push by them to trade down.
Tony, always great having you, man. You know, we just need a little teaser with Tony today. You're the teaser, man. What you are. Thank you, Tony.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Tony Pauline joining us. Talk a little bit about the draft getting warmed up and trying to figure out.
10 days away.
Be fun. Yeah. First round's awesome. But then you get a second round still really,
it
really
is.
Second and third round. You got to find, man. We got to find Xavier Howard and Kenyon Drake, man. We got to find two more of those kind of guys.
I'll take that draft.
Yeah.
I'll take that right there. Radio.com.
Radio.com. T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.